You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Good morning. Welcome to the show. It's Wednesday, April the 14th. It's a bright, cool day here in TW11 and lots to get through in the next half an hour or so. Before we start, sincerest condolences to Wayne Potts and all those connected with the two horses who died in a horrendous barn fire at Belmont Park yesterday. And huge plaudits to those fire and rescue officers and all the team at Belmont who safely managed to get 58 horses out of that barn unscathed. What an awful incident that must have been deeply traumatic for all those involved. We'll be hearing later in this podcast from J.A. McGrath about the latest situation in Hong Kong. He'll be giving you his views on Happy Valley today. Neil Callan, top-class rider who's been based in Hong Kong for a long time, he's appealing against the decision to suspend his license over an altercation in the steward's room and the decision not to renew his license subsequently. That appeal will run and run and is making up into quite an interesting story. As far as what's happening in the UK and Ireland is concerned, lovely time of the year where you get the best of the jumping and the very best of the blue-blooded flat horses coming out as well, just 2 weeks ahead of the 1,000 and 2,000 guineas. I was at Newmarket yesterday for the first day of the Craven meeting. It was lovely to be there, real spring in the air, lots of people in a really good mood. Obviously, it would have been helped with some crowds, but they'll be along shortly. And a sublime performance as well from a horse called Mutasar Beck, who you heard Charlie Hills talking about on this podcast 2 days ago. You can talk about him in even more glowing terms now. As I welcome Jane Maggan to the show, the question now is, should this horse, who's a son of the 1,000 guineas winner Ganati, now be supplemented, because he needs to be, for the 2,000 guineas?
Absolutely no question about it. He couldn't have done any more impressively. Look, he at the back end of last year, he was held up on heavy ground on that track and he won. But yesterday's performance, jumped from the gates quick, was always in Jim Crowley's hands. He travelled up the rail really smoothly, like a horse with a lot of pace. But he wasn't stopping when he hit the line. He was six lengths clear of Noble Dynasty. And just the attitude he showed, the action he showed, and the professionalism he showed on his second start, you couldn't help but be impressed. That was 7 furlongs. Yes, the question is a mile. Well, he's out of Ganati, who did it over a mile on that track. He's by Invincible Spirit. He's got all the right credentials. And I couldn't help but think, after they crossed the line, why wasn't he entered in the guineas?
Well, that, Jane, is exactly the question I posed to the racing manager, Angus Gold.
The reason we didn't put him in, Charlie initially suggested we put him in, and we had been told we have to cut our entry fees, we were spending too much on entry fees, and as this horse, for the reasons I've just said, that they'd spent so long not buzzing him up, I just said to Charlie, do we really want to rush this horse straight into a guineas? We don't know where he fits in yet. You know, it's very easy when you've seen him win like he did yesterday to say, well, of course he should have been in, and I wish he was in, but at the same time, is it the right thing to do for the horse? That's what we've got to decide. I've no doubt he's a very high class horse in the making. Whether it's going to be in 2 weeks' time is another matter. So I think the first thing is, I'm going down to Lambourne later in the week. We'll see how he's come out of the race. Just see what happens with the rest of the trials. We've got to discuss Mujibar, who's already a group winner, and what we do with him. And then obviously, if everybody feels that he's bounced out of the race in very good form, both mentally and physically, and that he's gone forward from it, well then obviously I will discuss with Sheikh Hamdan's family whether or not they would like to supplement him.
And it's not as simple as you say as just one horse, because you've got others in the mix, Mujibar and potentially Alcumate, who I guess you're trying to work out whether he's going to stay a mile in the Greenham this week.
That's right. You've got to have opinions in life, and I'm firmly of the opinion that he's a sprinter, and I think it's not wrong to say Jim Crowley would agree with that assessment. Marcus is hopeful, as long as he settles, that he will get further, and the Greenham is a perfect race to try and find that out in. We did exactly the same with Mohara a few years back. So All being well, he will run in the green, and when we'll get some idea, I personally am not expecting him to stay a stiff guineas mile at Ascot. Whereas Mujbar, I think, will stay it. So we'll probably run him as well, and just to see where we are with him. And then, well, obviously, we have the options if everybody feels that this horse, the horse who ran yesterday, is better, then we have the option of supplementing him for Newmarket and maybe going to France with Mujbar. Or, you know, we'll just work out the permutations before we discuss supplementing Mutasabek.
And just before you go, Angus, I must ask you about Maynard, who ran a fine 1,000 guineas trial in Ireland at the weekend for Kevin Prendergast and Chris Hayes. Is she now headed for the Irish guineas?
I very much hope so. Yeah, I thought she ran an outstanding race, the amount of ground she made up. Chris said it was a funny one. He thought she might have been in season. He said she was just a bit quiet before the race for her. She's quite a bouncy Frankel filly. And he said she was very quiet before, and he just couldn't get her to travel in the early part of the race for some reason. Whether it was just first time back at the track and she's only had one run before and it was all a bit new still, or whether it was because she was in season. But as you saw, she flew home, was, you know, another stride she'd got up, and the trip obviously going up a furlong will only help her. And yeah, I think, you know, you had to be very impressed with her. So as long as she comes out of it in good form, that's where we'll head with her.
Angus Gold there. So there you have it, Jane, the answer to your question as to why Mutasabek had been taken out of the guineas. Even the world's biggest thoroughbred operations have to count the costs.
Well, look, it's a fair enough explanation. If that's what they felt was right at the time, that's fair enough. But it's going to cost a few pennies to supplement him now, and he has every right to take up that cost. This is only the start of the flat season. We often get carried away somewhat with early performances. I know I was blown away by Bolshoi Ballet at Leopardstown in the Bally Sacks, but there is going to be smart horses come out between now and when the classics actually start. But Mutasabek definitely into many notebooks yesterday, and just the fact that you would imagine Charlie Hills will have him on an improving curve for the rest of the season. If that's the way he's starting, where could he end up?
Yeah, I loved him. I think pedigree will always come out if you've got a really smart one. And the fact that he's a great grandson of Height of Fashion as well, it seems written in the stars for me. James Willoughby's sectional analysis is fascinating. This is a horse who ran some incredibly quick fractions in the mid part of the race, and he suggests that those could even suggest the horse is a sprinter. But I think you have to try, don't you? It's a bit like what Angus was saying with Alcu Mate at the weekend. He thinks he's a sprinter, really, but there's only one guinea, so you have to give it a go, and then you can always come back.
Yeah, well, I think many of the major, or if not all of the major owner breeder operations, they revolve around the classics. They think that those classics, the guineas, the Derby and the Leger, they're what shape the breed. And if Mutasabek can stay a mile in the guineas, then he is of top class, and they have the option to always come back and trip in the future. But there is only one guineas, there's only a couple of classics every year, and if he can bag one of those, what'll that do for his prospects in the future? But two from two so far, and it's a very nice way to kickstart the Craven meeting as well, Nick. There's obviously important races, there's an important sale, but that really whet the appetite for what is to come.
I wanted to pick up one other point from Angus's interview there, and that was Maynard, who was second in the 1,000 guineas trial at the weekend. You were there. How impressed were you?
She's a beautiful filly to look at. Obviously, she's a sister to Autad, so you can imagine the pedigree is very good as well. Look, disappointed that she got beaten, but as it turned out, Keeper of Time was a brilliant story in her own right for Johnny Feen. But fell out of the gates, Maynard, travelled behind the bridle through the race, and still only beaten ahead in what looked like a competitive race. The 1,000 guineas trial at Leopardstown is traditionally the strongest of the trials. I remember going there to see Alpha Centauri when she got well beaten in that race before going on to win three or four group ones as a three-year-old. I think Maynard, if she goes to the Curragh, I think that's most likely her target. Kevin Prendergast indicated post-race she'll take an awful lot of beating, because I think mentally she was just caught out as being a little bit immature on only her second start at Leopardstown, and I think she'll be a lot sharper when she runs in group one company. If that is her next start, I wouldn't put anybody off.
Now, Craven Week means the Craven Breeze Up sale as well. You've been listening to our podcasts brought to you by Tattersall's, the Bloodstock Bulletin, on this platform the last couple of days. And somebody who was featured on the Bloodstock Bulletin, Alex Elliott, was the man who signed the ticket for the top lot yesterday. Alex joins me now. Alex, just tell me what it was.
practical joke filly, Nick, from Tally Ho Stud. She was bought as a foal, Nick. She's the first crop of practical joke who was a son of Into Mischief, who's probably the top sire in the States at the moment. Practical Joke was trained by Chad Brown. He now stands at Coolmore. As I said yesterday, the two-year-old guys in America have been raving about Practical Joke. This filly cost $180 as a foal. She didn't come back as a yearling. Roger Callahan and Arch St. George, his business partner, they brought her over to Europe and they put her through the Breeze Up system, which has proved the golden ticket for them.
And so where does she go now?
She's actually going to go back to Chad Brown in the States, who, as I said, he trained Practical Joke, and she was bought for Peter Brown's White Birch Farm. I could see this filly going back on the dirt, to be honest, and that's kind of why she's been sent back there with the option of going to the turf. I think she can do either or.
So, do you think it was quite unusual that she ended up here? Would there ever have been a realistic European market for her? Do you think
on the bottom side there is turf in there. I mean, her sister was placed in a Curragh Group race, Arch Rebels in the pedigree. So it wasn't that she didn't fit here. She's obviously a very talented filly that fits in either spot. But we just felt that going back there was going to give her a best chance.
And you also signed for a horse by Cody Bear. Where does that one head?
Cody Bear was sold by Aguiar Bloodstock. I bought that colt for Ammo Racing and the Wani family, who raced Devil Waller in partnership. Kia Durabchin, the principal, he had a winner yesterday at the Craven meeting. Force of Brazil, who was pre-trained by Robson, and Robson was very, very high on this colt. So, yeah, we were very happy to get him, and I think he's actually going to Dave Lock now.
This is an interesting operation that you're quite heavily involved with, Ammo Racing. Kia Durabchin, who's well known as a high-profile football agent. He's investing very heavily in the game now. How big do you think the string will be by the end of 2021, Alex?
That's a very good question. And I don't think even Kia knows that. I think there's about 80 on the books at the moment. And there's a real focus on Royal Ascot. Robson came on board last year. I mean, we had a very good year last year with the likes of Baradar, Devil Waller, and then the fillies. We've got Lullaby Moon. They're all going for Guineas trials. Well, Baradar's had a bit of a hold up. But there's a real focus this year on trying to get to Royal Ascot. They've obviously had two winners so far. The first profitable, which is a filly that won at Kempton. And yesterday there was the Kotai Glory, two freshman sires. And it's all about two-year-old speed at the moment. There's 80 in training at the minute, and that could progress. But ask me this time in a couple of months, and it will have all changed.
Well, if you've had a few Royal Ascot winners, then the answer could be 180. Beautiful Sunshine is running at Newmarket this afternoon. George Bowie, the trainer of this newcomer by Our Dad, gave her a very positive mention on Racing TV in an interview with me yesterday. Do you share his confidence?
I do. I've never seen the filly. She was bought by Robson last year, and she went back to Ireland. She was pre-trained in Ireland, like a lot of these horses have been. These guys in Ireland know. They know they're going through a lot of horses, and the cream is rising to the top. It's going through the same process, basically, as the Breeze-Ups. And they have them ready to rock and roll. And I think this filly is supposedly up there with the best of them, so I would expect a good showing from what I've heard.
Okay, and in terms of the sale as a whole last night, what were your observations from an agent's viewpoint?
All of these sales, Nick, are about finding good horses, and people find the good horses now. There's so much information available to everybody, and everybody. There's a lot of sharp people out there doing what they do. So the good horses make the money, and then the horses that are friendless, when they go to the ring, they're friendless in the ring. So it's becoming very polarized. But that's the market the world over, I think.
Is that just because of the efficiency of the system? Are agents getting better? Is it harder for you now than it was?
Definitely harder. All of these horses that go through all of the hoops, there's a premium on them. We're paying for them now as if they've won their maiden, whereas perhaps before people were kind of finding a few hidden gems. I don't think they're really out there anymore. Saying that, a horse like Steel Ball last year cost 28 grand, so it is still doable. But yeah, the more money you have, it seems the luckier that you get.
Alex Elliott there, Bloodstock agent. Very interesting about Ammo Racing and their burgeoning operation. Could well have another winner today at the Craven meeting with Beautiful Sunshine. And also, that final comment, Jane Mangan, the more money you have, the luckier you get. And the system is just becoming much, much more efficient in identifying the good horse.
It's universal, people say, in the national hunt sphere. People are getting more professional. The outfits are getting more professional. But of course, both on flat and national hunt, they are putting down more money. And there's an awful lot at stake. And this, it's too important to miss a beat. Yesterday, say, look, you kind of, I feel like you often have to be there to feel the aura and feel the vibes from vendors and buyers. But when you look at the numbers, there was 76 horses offered, 65 of them got sold with a clearance rate of 86. That clearance rate is what is most important. And it sets the tone for the year ahead. Look, the Craven to me was always the best, or perceived as the best breeze up sale, but because it's the earliest, I wonder, is the playing field being leveled somewhat with the other breeze up sales, because it, traditionally you'd have fireworks at this, and yes, it just wasn't any fireworks, and we'll just see how the season develops. But if the racetrack is exciting, which it was yesterday, then people will get inspired to spend a few bob, and that's probably what needs to happen, or is happening. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion. Everybody will feel differently about it, but good horses sell anywhere, and good horses will win anywhere.
And let's talk about good horses who are heading to Punchestown, because they might be the dying embers of the jump season in the UK, but that will breathe dragon fire into it in Ireland the last week, particularly with Rachel Blackmore going for this Jockeys Championship. How many does she need now, and how many days are there left?
Yeah, no, nine winners to equal Paul, 10 to beat him, with 11 meetings left. It's going to be very tight. Jamie Codd and Patrick Mullins also very tight in the amateur championship. But the headline acts will be the horses again, as they should be. The headline acts will always be the horses. And you still have horses like Appreciated, Bob Olinger, Envoy LN, Monkfish. The entries for grade ones came out, and they are just nothing short of mouth-watering. The prospects of all these horses turning up will obviously be reliant on ground. I have the utmost confidence in Punchestown that they'll provide safe ground for these horses, because they know if they don't, they won't run. And then the prospect of Epitante and Goshen, just two names, possibly being earmarked for the Champion and other races in between as well. I know we're very much getting into the flat season now, but this is a very big hurdle yet to jump.
Yeah, huge. Here's a question for you. How do you think the racing public is going to respond to Rachel's title chase? I only ask because if it was any normal year and she was just going head to head with Paul Townend, the welter of support behind her would be massive. And he's had his championships before, many of them. But because he's on the sidelines, will people feel a bit more restrained from kind of really rooting for her to go and overtake him?
No. And Paul, I have a lot of sympathy for your situation if you're listening, but the fact that you won it number of times before, the nation, people who don't ever watch racing are tuning in, people who never have bets are just, what's Rachel Blackmore on, and having their few bob on that. I think it's just bigger than the sport right now. She's on absolutely every publication, any news outlet that can get a hold of her. And that's, like, it's huge, obviously. I know everybody's saying it's huge for the sport, but it's huge for her as an individual as well, because she'll have never been exposed to this kind of media attention before, and I'm sure she'll handle it really well. But ultimately, she was back doing the day job yesterday, rode a winner at Fairy House, and now her focus is going to completely shift to what would be the crowning moment of anybody's career, is the championship. So it's going to be tight, it's going to be difficult, but the entire sport and beyond are getting behind her for this, because they know how the girl is a game changer already, but this would be the crowning moment, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think it's almost impossible in terms of reach and significance to surpass the Grand National, isn't it? But it would be another
massive feather in her cap, and it wouldn't be it's not going to be the last one either, let's face it. You know, all things being equal and granted a fair wind and this continued strength of the horses she's riding, it might be her first Jockeys Championship, but it ain't going to be her last. You don't think she's going to do a Frankham and pull up when she gets level with him?
No comment, but I think everybody knows the competitive nature this person has, and you don't get to where she has gotten, because I just think that everything and all the talents that a person is given, you just have to be this natural. I think if you're at a traffic lights and there's two cars upside, I'd say she's competitive to get off the traffic lights quicker than the person beside her. Do you know, that kind of mentality is what gets you to where she is.
Now, this is where people who really don't like talking about a Jockeys Championship zone out. Jane, but Harry Skelton is now two in front of Brian Hughes and is a very short prize to be champion jockey in the UK. Do you have anything to add?
Look, just looking at today's, it does add a little bit of extra intrigue to the Cheltenham card. Harry Skelton has six rides, Brian Hughes has two. The bookmakers have basically suggested that it's a one-way traffic, but this is a little bit tighter, not even a little bit tighter, but just as I said, it adds intrigue to races that wouldn't ordinarily capture the imagination.
So these jockeys title races enlivening the end of the jump season in Britain and in Ireland, something we've become quite used to in Hong Kong, which is where we head now, and to Jim McGrath.
Hi, Nick. Is it a calm before the storm in Hong Kong racing? Well, in a normal year, it would be. Hong Kong's Champions Day is only 10 days away, and the next three race days would normally be a nice preamble to one of the biggest meetings of the year. But the pandemic has changed things dramatically. Foreign participation, normally such an important component, is limited. The Japanese love Champions Day, and they'll be well represented, as ever, but then it starts to drop away. There'll be only one foreign jockey flying in this year, Japanese rider Kohei Matsuyama, who rides the favourite Daring Tact in the QE2. So no Murphy, Buick, Moore, Bowman or McAvoy. The reason is simple, the mandatory hotel quarantine. Because Europe is rife with COVID infection, the Hong Kong government has declared that jockeys visiting from Europe, and the UAE as well, I should add incidentally, must be confined to a hotel room for 3 weeks quarantine on arrival. Not surprisingly, there are not many queuing up for the privilege. Let's hope it can change in time for the International Day in December. The beneficiaries, though, in this unusual situation are a couple of Hong Kong's big names. Two examples. Joe Moreira will ride Japanese visitor Danon Smash in the sprint, while Vincent Ho picks up the ride on Love's Only You, another Japanese star who caught the eye when third to Mishriff in the Dubai Shima Classic last month. Yes, it's going to be very different, but Champions Day will retain its status in difficult circumstances, that's for sure. Now on to this week's Happy Valley Wednesday fixture. Joe Moreira goes into the meeting 18 wins ahead of old rival Zach Purton, and I think the Magic Man can chalk up a decent win on smart middle order sprinter Stock Legend, which is race 6 number 4 Stock Legend, trained by Francis Lui, who by the way is brimming with confidence ahead of Golden 60's attempt at the Champions Mile, in which he has only 5 rivals to face on April the 25th. But back to the Valley. The last race, over 9 furlongs, looks a cracker on paper, but let's follow an old favourite in Charity Fun, a lovely staying type who didn't measure up in time for the Derby, but can comfortably take this Class 2 contest. So race 9, number 2 Charity Fun for the trainer, Danny Shum, and also with Zach Purton to ride. And take him in a forecast and a tote swinger with number 8, Righteous Doctrine. So 2 Charity Fun and 8 Righteous Doctrine. That's all on the Hong Kong beat. I'll have more for you on the podcast next week.
My thanks to Jim and to Angus Gold earlier on in the show, and also to Alex Elliott. Jane Mangan is still with me. Jane, have you got a tip for me for today? What great racing. Newmarket, Cheltenham, Beverley, Kempton, Leopardstown and Happy Valley.
But I'm going to Newmarket. You're going to be there in the flesh. I'm going to be watching you talk. So
I'm not. Lydia is at the helm today. I'm not at Newmarket. I'm at home. Cheltenham tomorrow.
Do you know, you just even better. I'll be listening to Lydia talk about the 225, and I hope she's going to be talking about tactical. Look, this is obviously the seven runners. They're all handicapped debutants. It's a difficult race, but I like tactical when he won the July stakes last year at Newmarket. I think he wasn't suited by the Morney, and seven furlongs. Yeah, likely to be up his street. Andrew Balding has got his string in really out early and in good form. So tactical for me, for a timely winner for the Queen.
Great stuff. Tactical in at the Royal Silks this afternoon for Jane. That was Wednesday, April the 14th, day two of the Craven meeting. We will be back to do it all over again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.